Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner Sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today is the spiritual use of money. And before I begin, I just would like to give credit to Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization that sponsors this show. And all of the dialogue that you'll hear on this show emanates from the works of Alice Bailey. She wrote 24 volumes of literature, and that's the essence of all that we talk about on this show, as is this thought for today. Just as money has been in the past the instrument of men's selfishness, now it must be the instrument of their goodwill. I always think of money as the symbol of my energy, and I also think that oftentimes we get caught up in valuing money for more or less an intrinsic worth, and probably more appropriate, we should look upon money as something we make as a result of doing something we love, and if we love doing it, then the money will just happen anyway. Why is money so often used for selfish purposes?
I'm not sure, but I think one reason might be that people think of it as finite, that there's only so much money available in the world, only so much available to them, and it, feeds a sense of scarcity that makes people want to corner the supply of money for themselves and the people they care about, that if you don't grab as much as you can for yourself, there will be it will be taken by everybody else. So it's probably fed by this idea that it's limited, rather than seeing money as a kind of a river of abundance that should pour throughout the world for the meeting of all need everywhere, and that each of us would take what we need, but not feed our greed and our selfishness.
Yeah, I often think that money is acquired for selfish purposes because there are so many selfish people in the world, and they're still focused at that level when they are more concerned about what they can acquire than what they can pass on and what they can give and share. And I think so it gets right back to a basic attitude of self-centeredness and self and greed, as you mentioned.
Well, we're certainly seeing all of that played out in an incredibly discouraging way these days, with the revelation of corruption on the part of the accountants, Arthur Anderson and so on, Enron, the scandal, now
WorldCom
is the latest scandal. All of these and many other examples have to do with a few people, probably just a few, having absolutely no sense of responsibility to the company, much less to their employees or to the larger humanity, and just wanting to grab all they can for themselves and doing everything they can to make that happen.
Yeah, and we have to realize what selfishness does, because when selfishness rules one's life, there is a danger of being actually taken over by the impulse, by this being possessed in a way and imprisoned by material things. one may think that he owns all of this money or all of these things, but in fact, it's the other way around, I think.
Your stuff owns you.
That's right. You do. You are owned by all this stuff, by the money, and you can't get away from it until you begin to exercise some detachment within yourself.
Yeah.
And you can't be released. It's like being released from a prison when you get the burden of all of these material things off your back.
Maybe that's why that fellow I knew years ago kept all his worldly possessions in two bags. He could pack everything he owned into two suitcases. And maybe that gave him a sense of freedom.
I would think so.
It was strange, but you could certainly say that he was ready to change his life at the drop of a hat. And I suppose it gave him a sense of liberation from being possessed by stuff. And that's not so preposterous as it sounds.
Yeah, I think one of the early tests on the path, as they say, we've talked about the path, you know, discipleship path and path back to God. And one of the early tests on this path concerns the attitude and the handling of money and wealth, because it deals with the most basic sustenance that we have, the money and the material wealth that we accumulate. And if it accumulated for the self, then there may be painful consequences along that path. And these are lessons that have to be worked out. And the corporate managers that you mentioned earlier are just now finding this out. Terrible, painful lessons of accumulated wealth in a selfish way.
I wonder why it is that people who have a great deal of wealth don't always want to share it. Some do, some don't. But there doesn't seem to be any particular law or principle that governs how they will respond to that wealth. Some people who are very wealthy use it in a way that enables them to benefit and support causes that they believe in. Other people keep it for themselves. A couple of years ago, for example, I read about the housing industry on Long Island, where there's a great deal of building that's going on. People have a lot of money in this country, and particularly in this part of the country, and are happy to buy these homes on Long Island. And I read about this contractor who said he couldn't make the homes lavish enough, that the more lavish he could furnish them, the better. For example, if he could put in an $8,000 shower head, that really helped the house sell. And that stuck in my mind as something that I just find incredible, an $8,000 shower head. Why would you need that when I don't know what a shower head costs? I haven't bought one recently, but I'll bet you can get one for $100. I don't know. Let's just say $100. Why an $8,000 one? But if he could put those in the houses, that made them sell better. So the object for him was not to keep the price down, but to actually keep it up.
Yeah, that's interesting. What you were saying, too, before about people looking at money as being finite was, I thought it was really a thought that stimulated my interest, because if you think of Buddha and the thought that he came out with, it's so well known that our beliefs determine our reality, then perhaps the idea that money is finite causes it to be finite. And perhaps maybe a more appropriate thought would be the one you were thinking of before, you mentioned before, Sarah, and that is to think of money as coming from a source instead of being limited. Look upon it as though you were taking water from the ocean or from a river. Mm-hmm. Would that be more appropriate, or a better way metaphysically of thinking of money as being an endless supply, maybe?
Obviously, you have to be practical and realistic about your financial obligations. If you have bills to pay, you have to have the amount of money that will enable you to pay those bills. You can't just go out and hope for it to fall out of the sky. So you have to be realistic. But on the other hand, I think it really is true that money has a kind of an elastic quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
You would be surprised at how little you need to live on and to live happily on. And you would also be surprised at how you can quite literally stretch a dollar, to use a phrase that we've probably all heard, somehow there is something that happens with money that when you begin to work with it in a kind of a spiritual and energetic way, it does expand for the meeting of need, not mm-hmm. greed. And I suppose that's linked in with the principle of, or the image of the river.
How would money be an instrument of goodwill?
Well, there's so many ways. Some years ago, I heard a commentary by Roger Rosenblatt, the journalist, on Channel 13, who was speaking about money for good. Money is an agent for good. And he expressed it so beautifully. It's very creative to think of using money as a means to support and strengthen the good. And there are any number of ways you can do this. You can use it for philanthropical causes, for charities, for helping people you know, for supporting your community. You can think in terms that are farther afield and imagine using it to help people in impoverished countries. There are any number of ways it can be used to express goodwill.
Yes, and when it's given to fill a real need, an obvious need, I think it's best when it's given and asking nothing in return.
Mm-hmm.
Then one can release it freely, and there is no obligation, no strings attached, or anything like that, because giving from an attitude of goodwill implies a certain degree of release from the hold of that material substance. And so I think if one recognizes a genuine need and gives of it freely and spontaneously, I'm thinking of the response after September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
There was a tremendous outpouring of money in this country. They literally took in close to $1 billion, I think, was given. And this was spontaneously given just to help the victims and their families. And it was a tremendous example of the potential that lies out there within the heart of this country, the people in this country. And I think that's something, a genuineness that cannot be overlooked.
And it's not just in our own society. Maybe some of our listeners read on the front of the Times a few weeks ago about the Maasai people in Kenya who had not heard about September 11th until just recently. They don't have television and radio. They're rural pastoral people, but one of their own community came back from having been in America and told them about this disaster. He had a hard time explaining to them how people could fall from 80 floors. They couldn't imagine buildings that high, and it was very difficult for them to grasp. But when they realized what had happened, they gave their cattle to the people of New York.
Oh, boy.
And it touched me, because that's their greatest wealth, and without a thought or any deliberation, they turned over all their cattle to the people of New York.
Four cows, I think. Four cows?
Oh, I think it was more than that.
More than that, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
It was. They emptied out their cow coffers, you could say.
Well, that's their money. That's what they use for money.
Yeah. Right, and they gave out of their own abundance without reservation. That's how we should all share, but
it was certainly their demonstration of love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was, to me, a telling example of people giving from the heart.
Right, absolutely.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and today we're discussing the spiritual use of money. And if you'd like a general package of information where you'll find out what Lucis Trust is all about, who we are, you can certainly do so by giving us a call, and we'll send you out a general package of information that contains a lot of material, including a wonderful prayer that Sarah says at the end of the show, the Great Invocation. But there's quite a bit of material informing you as to who we are and some of our ways of looking at life, perhaps for lack of a better expression. The best way of saying what Lucis Trust is all about is that it's a spiritual philosophy organization. We're not a religion. We have people who come to our monthly meetings who are from all walks in, of life, or a variety of religious backgrounds. And we talk about how to make the world a better place and what each of us can do. So if you'd like the general package of information, we'll send it out to you, of course, free of charge. 1-866-695-8247. Once again, 1-866-695-8247. And if you'd like copies of our cassette tapes or our books or any information that you'd like, you can do so by calling that number, 1-866. An easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York LUCIS. And all the work of the LUCIS Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the LUCIS Trust. We're not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals, so please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. Donations can be sent to LUCIS Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And our website is www.lucistrust.org. And if you key into that website, you can take a look and listen to all of the previously archived library of shows that we have. And we have a lot by this time. Once again, that website, www.lucistrust.org. And perhaps I was also thinking what Dale and you were saying, Sarah, before about people who get very wealthy, but their money ends up owning them. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting concept. I've seen that so often where people can't go a particular place or do a particular thing or even have set forth the most basic freedoms because they're so immersed in their material possessions. But more importantly, just to get back to our show, how does the LUCIS Trust fund its work? Because here we are talking about giving and the energy of giving.
One of the amusing things about our name, LUCIS Trust, is that quite often people assume we're a financial trust and will mm-hmm. call us in hopes of being able to get some money from us. It's a little bit amusing because our work is conducted entirely by voluntary donation. We've been in existence since about 1921, so it's been 80 years, and we have always refused to charge for what we make available, our newsletters, our literature, our meetings, the training that we offer through the Arcane School, which is a correspondence course, the seminars, conferences that we hold. All of that is offered on a voluntary donation basis. Not because we don't like money. We would love to have a lot more money because we could do so much more in our work. But because we believe that no price can be put on spiritual teaching, which is what we offer through our literature and our programs, through this radio program, which, by the way, happens to be extremely expensive because WOR is a very popular radio station. We don't charge for spiritual teaching because if you think about it, what price would you put on it? $1 million for an awareness of the plan of God? $10,000? Mm-hmm. You couldn't put a price. But what we have to do is try to educate people to understand that if they want to support the principles of our work, and if they can donate, that is how our work can go forward. We have always had to generate this sense of responsibility on the part of our co-workers and our supporters so that they can fund our work.
And speaking of funding our work, if you in the listening audience would like to donate, as Robert has just said earlier, why, please do, because, and as Sarah said, this radio station is rather expensive for us, and we have expenses to meet, and if we want to stay on the air, then we need the funds to do that, and we need your help to help us out in that. Now, if you are willing to give a donation, we will send to you a about a 30-page booklet we have available. It's a compilation from the books of Alice Bailey, and it's called Money, the Medium of Loving Distribution. And we will send this copy, a copy of this booklet to you for a loving donation for the work of the Lucis Trust, and specifically for to keep these programs on the air. And this is a booklet of 30 pages. It's a compilation of excerpts from many of the Alice Bailey books on the subject of money. And it's called Money, the Medium of Loving Distribution. And for any donation you would care to give, we will send this to you as a bonus.
Maybe we should mention our address, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, 10005. Coming back to how the Lucis Trust funds its work, we have endeavored to work with the spiritual principles that govern the flow of money. It might surprise people to think that money is governed by spiritual law, but in fact it is. There is no aspect of the manifested world that is outside of spiritual law, because all kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, animal, human, are expressions of God's plan. And that includes the mineral kingdom and, I suppose, the vegetable kingdom from which money arises, thinking of money now as made of paper before it was coins. Money is governed by spiritual law, and we work with that realization by working actively in meditation and encouraging others to cooperate in meditation for the redirection of money into the hands of those who would serve and share. And in fact, we have a special meditation practice that many people throughout the world do as a group on Sundays for the redirection of money.
And in fact, that meditation that you mentioned is contained in the back of this booklet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you at home want to also participate in this way of attracting money for spiritual purposes, then there is a meditation outline given in this little booklet, and you can use this at home at whenever it's convenient for you. And
but
you can join the worldwide group of people that are also working with the same meditation.
Maybe we should stress the fact, though, that it is not a meditation to attract money into your own hands.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is not used for selfish purposes and should not be. It's a meditation that is used as a service to humanity with the realization that money is needed for the upliftment of human consciousness, and this needs the focus of the group of people who are skilled in meditation. Because when you think about it, the redirection of money is going to happen only when human consciousness is changed from the selfish, possessive attitude toward money to an attitude of wanting to share abundantly, as the Maasai people seem to understand intuitively. We have to work to help human beings see money as an agent of the good, to quote Roger Rosenblatt. And so the meditation that we do is for the distribution of money into the hands of those who would serve and share, so that there is enough for everyone, but no damming up of the supply in the hands of just a few, as is the present condition.
And once again, if you'd like to order the general package of information informing you about Lucis Trust, or if for any reason you want to call concerning a donation or any other question, give us a call once again, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way, 1-866-695-8247. NY Lucis, think of New York Lucis, and remember that donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. I like that little excerpt that you gave, too, and I found that interesting, the book, Sarah, about how attracting money is more a matter of consciousness. I hope we can all evolve to that consciousness. But money is also the consolidation of the loving, living energy of divinity. Alice Bailey said, that's her quote, what does this mean?
That money is the consolidation of the energy of divinity. I find that a wonderfully inspiring thought, that the densest aspect of the mineral kingdom, which is money, you could say, is a manifestation of divinity. That implies that the way in which you use that money is our means of serving God's purpose. And I think more and more we are coming to understand that, because the past century or so has seen the growth of philanthropies, of charitable giving. People are extremely generous when they are confronted with need, especially when it's physical need. When there's a disaster, an earthquake, a fire, or whatever, or when there is a tragedy like a famine, or the September 11th experience, people give abundantly. What's more difficult is to help people realize the need to give for spiritual growth. What I'm thinking of is efforts to educate, to promote spiritual values, to distribute spiritual teaching. Those are much more abstract concepts, and that's part of the challenge of our work, to generate money for a work that is really quite abstract and yet we believe practical and absolutely needed.
And that's where the energy of goodwill comes into play, because goodwill carries the energy of love, and selfishness interrupts the flow of that love. And so we're dealing with a concretized energy of goodwill and love here in terms of money.
There are many people who like to say a noontime mantra each day to remind them of the need of the world. It's very brief. It says, "We know, O Lord of life and love, about the need. Touch our hearts anew with love, that we too may love and give." And that's available on a card if people would like it. It's a way of cooperating in this meditative effort.
Mm-hmm. And once again, if you'd like the book, Money, the Medium of Loving Distribution, that's the subject of today's show. Today we'll send it out to you if you give us a donation. Donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you'd like the general package of information, you can get that for free, of course, 1-866-NY-LUCIS or 1-866-695-8247. That's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you.